This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 18th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, you and I went pretty deep in apes this week. Our first one of the year, our first legitimate
one. Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit more later when I mentioned everybody that my last three live tournaments, I made the final table. And then I qualify it by saying that at most there were 35 people in this tournament. Takes a little bit of the luster off. So, yeah, we both went deep, but well, we had 45, which is actually
for stud,
not bad for a non-CNLHE tournament. So yeah, I mean, you went out 15. I turned my head for a minute to cough, probably.
Yeah.
And you were out, and then I was able to lift my wounded body into 11th. But yeah, I had a good time. I thought I played well, and yeah, as usually in these apes things, I had one bad hand.
Yeah. I had a hand where I was ahead and got sucked out on the last card, and that's how I got out. And I made a mental note to just I'm gonna go big or go home, and I went home at the end there. But yeah, I know I played so cautiously the entire night. Didn't get involved in a hand unless I really had a made hand, like a pair already, or a place where I knew I could steal. I was so conscious of it all and played a pretty good game. I was in the money spots almost the whole night, or at least most of the night. And then at the end, I knew I had aces up, and I knew he only had tens up, and I knew I was gonna be good to go. And then I picked up a flush draw when he re-raised. Even if he had a straight, I still had a chance to hit an ace, a queen, or a spade, and turns out I was ahead even on the river, and then made it straight, so I was out, and I lived with it. But we had fun afterward, too. I played in the home game with a lot of guys, so it was a good night.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had one of those, you know, I mentally prepared myself for this tournament, because I'm trying to focus more on these. So, you know, I walked and got a little ice cream cone, a little ice cream parlor down the other end of my neighborhood, right?
Uh-huh.
Right before apes, I got home 10 minutes before, and I was on the way home, I was like, don't draw.
Yeah.
Play this big hand strong, don't draw. And then inevitably, with the hand that knocked me out was one of these where I let my ego get involved, and so rare for me, because usually I'm the little wimpy guy at the table.
Yeah,
you know, letting people take pots off me left and right, and then milking the short stack, right? And I had a hand where the guy brought it in, folded all the way around to me. I'm the last act, and I have split eights.
Yep.
All right, boom, race, right?
Yep.
Complete, and of course he calls. And then a continuation bet, and he calls. And at that point, I should have, and then it checked. And of course, then I pick up a flush draw.
Of course.
On 6th Street, and I got a pair, and his board isn't very scary. And I'm like, all right, you know, let's probably still win this thing. And of course, at that point, I had to call, at that point, half my stack on that last bet. Missed it all. And if I should have just, you know, hey, I tried to raise and take it. After that, you know, forget about my eights. It's not a strong enough hand to risk my tournament on.
Yeah.
But next year's I will remember.
But I did the same thing, man. I said, I'm not going to play drawing hands unless I absolutely have, like, three suited broadways or something. And then I didn't. I really didn't. I was real determined and real disciplined. And then at the end, I knew I was ahead, and I just pushed it, thinking that I was going to win the hand. And then when I didn't win the hand, I was like, oh, I'm out. Oh, well.
Well, congratulations to Chipman 92561. I don't know if that's a zip code. I need to look it up. You think it is?
It might be.
That's a lot of numbers to put in your, without it being a zip code.
Sounds like a California zip code.
Probably he doesn't know the zip plus four, if that's the case, because he could have strung a few more numbers on there. But Chipman, whoever you are, congratulations. You knocked out a good one. Rice F 88.
Yep.
Multiple banana winner.
So you think it's Chipman or you think it's Chipman? You think that's his last name, like Chipman, like Goldman, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. I don't know. We'll see. I believe it was his first cash, according to our great statistician, Poker Geek MN, on his site, which you can get to off of AniapMagazine.com/apes. I don't know whether it was his first tournament ever, though, but we had a couple people at the final table that was their first tournament, and they were very excited. The new 666 thing.
Yeah.
That we're doing.
Yeah.
Brought in some new players. Of course, there's probably some players that couldn't play. Oh, of course, last night was a Wednesday night, though, right?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that it fell on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, so all last year's players should have played this year.
Yeah.
Unless they just picked up their shovels and took their sand buckets home.
It was a pretty good turnout, though, 40-something people. That's
not bad.
Not bad for a stud, so I'm encouraged by that. And, you know, our next event is No Limit Hold'em, March 26th, noon. Noon generally means, Saturday? What does that mean?
It is a Saturday, and it is also during one of my fantasy baseball drafts. So
oh, no.
I will be distracted, which means I am almost a shoo-in to make the final table.
Well, I'd like to say that I'm proud to be one of the Rant 2112 winners of the hand of on the forum. So my seat is given.
Oh, sorry. I had a little fix frog in my throat there.
So I won a free seat to the Apes event. Yay! I'm playing with house money.
Oh, man. And, of course, you know, you can check out the schedule for all the Apes events. Remember, if the date runs on a 6, that means we're playing an event that day or night.
Yep.
But you can get the full schedule at AniapMagazine.com/AIPS. And just a reminder, Chipman, send us your address at podcast@AniapMagazine.com. We'll get that Nanner trophy out to you. And also, you are the proud winner of a pair of Blue Shark Poker Optics. Great sponsor for this year's tournament. Every winner gets a pair of Blue Shark Poker Optics this year, Chris.
Yeah, they're great sunglasses. And you and I even had our photos taken with them on at the circuit event.
Yeah, and in Jamaica.
And in Jamaica. Yeah, the bobsled. That's right, absolutely. We gotta circulate that photo somehow. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's on the Facebook. So go to AniapMagazine.com or whatever, Aniap Magazine's Facebook page. I guess I should figure out what that is. I think people know how to use the search box, though, right?
I got to get you my picture.
Oh, man. And, of course, Stars was very graciously to put up 2,000 clams for our Tournament Champions free roll.
Man, that's awesome.
So if you win a Warner Apes event, you're guaranteed to be in that, playing for, I think the top prize is 700 in that.
Man, I really wanted to play in that, too. That's why I was pushing so hard last night. I really wanted to have a big stack at the final table. And damn, got to wait another event for that.
But remember, you don't even have to win to make it the Tournament of Champions this year. You just have to play in a lot of events or do very well in the events that you do play in. So
yeah.
We'll see you at the Tournament of Champions in February of next year.
Do I get anything for 15th?
You get a pat on the back.
Thanks, buddy.
Job eagerly done.
Well, here's our chance to give you a pat on the back. You've got some wisdom for us, don't you?
Well, wisdom is in quotes. I didn't put it on the notes that way, but hold on. Quote and quote. All right, well, I'm calling this Scott's Troika of Tournament Wisdom.
Man, you know what? Is Troika, is that even a word?
It is a word. It's Russian. And I feel free to use it now because we don't have any Russian listeners anymore because we got rid of the free rolls.
And they won't bust your balls on how to pronounce it properly.
Of course not. Of course not. I do believe it's Russian for some variation of three.
It's like trio, but with a K-A in there. And
Yeah. So here's the thing. I've been playing. I've finally got out of the office, and I've been playing live tournaments again for a little bit. And so I've got some stuff backed up here from my amazing run of three consecutive final tables. With fields ranging from 14 to 33.
The money amount, too, that you've won is remarkable.
Yes, yes, yes. I have, counting my buy-ins, I have lost the total amount of the buy-ins in dealer add-on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, but I've run across a couple of people that I thought that I should mention here. First, you know, Chris, you've ever been at a table with a chatty Cathy?
Mostly a chatty Carl.
Yeah, I was going to say, generally it's not a Cathy, it's a Carl. You're right.
Yeah.
This was probably a chatty Carlos, though. It was not Anglo-Saxon. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but just setting it up here. So I was in this tournament, right, and he was right to my right, and he would not shut up the entire tournament. He had to talk about his hand. He had to talk about the players of the hand. He said, oh, man, can you believe that? He had to look up at the Greyhounds racing on the screen and talk to me about what dog he thought was going to win there. And the only reason I bring up that he wasn't, you know, good old straight American is that I had trouble understanding him because he had an accent.
Hmm.
Which made it even worse, because if it's a chatty Cathy, at least I can, like, you know, I know what I'm nodding and smiling at, you know, which is my general reaction to these people. Yeah. Even though I'm not agreeing or anything, I'm just, you know, acknowledging them so they don't keep asking me if I hear them.
Right.
But when somebody I can't even understand, you know, I don't know if I'm giving away my sister or something to this guy, you know, by nodding and going, yeah. So it was real frustrating, right?
It's like the low talker on Seinfeld.
Yes.
Next thing you know, you're going to be wearing a puffy shirt.
Exactly.
Fine TV table.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get the Annie Up puffy shirt in the Annie Up store at AnnieUpStore.com. But I figured out how to combat a chatty Cathy, Chris.
Okay.
You know, I was over at Tampa Bay Downs, a place that's close to my house, and they have really good food there. And now they have tableside dining too, so I don't have to get up. So I asked for a menu, right? And the guy next to me is like, "Yes, menu." So I came over and I was trying to figure out what I wanted, and he ordered, right? As soon as his food came up, guess what? I didn't hear anymore, Chris. I didn't hear a peep from chatty Carlos.
So you're going to be buying people meals, is what you're saying?
So here's the thing: I was monitoring his food intake. And when he got my plan was, when he got down to his last few bites, I was going to tell the dealer, food service, please. And have him come over. I was going to buy him a pretzel or what, you know, I was going to scan the menu for the cheapest thing on there that was going to be the hardest thing for him to eat. And it's just going to keep shoving food down his gullet like, you know, a goose that I'm trying to have pate for him. It was amazing how much quieter he got because he ate.
Wouldn't it just be cheaper to put the headset on like you usually do and but ignore him?
I didn't bring it. And remind me that, or you know, how frustrating it is when you sit there and like, oh my God, I put my headphones in, but I didn't bring them today.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's got to feed a chatty Cathy.
So you can put money out of your own pocket just to shut the guy up next to you.
Hey, well worth it. Best money I would have spent all night.
Did you make the final table in that tournament?
Of course I did.
Excellent.
Did I make the money in that tournament? Of course I didn't.
Of course you didn't.
All right, well, you know, as frustrating and as annoying as this person was, he wasn't as frustrating as a player who was just playing in a manner that frustrates me. Have you encountered these people?
Sure.
You just can't do anything right against them. They're playing very, in my opinion, weird. In their opinion, probably very sound. I'm not making a judgment.
Right.
Playing so weird that you can't get a read on them. You can't. You don't know really what to do with these people, right?
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't know what to do with these people. I really don't. You know, somebody that's willing to 3-bet with 9-tray offsuit, and then do the same thing with pocket aces. You just have no idea where you are, right?
Right.
But human nature takes over. For the weaker species, which is a Scottish longus, and you get these people get in your head, and I'm not saying that this person I don't think was a is in any danger of making a World Series final table. Ever, I don't think it was a pro player; it was just player playing weird. I made up my mission to knock this player out of the tournament.
No.
Can't do that.
No, you can't do that. We've discussed this in earlier shows. Don't be targeting one person. You'll get away from your game.
Just sat there. I'm like, all right, when I get a good hand, when I get a good hand, I'm going to get a hand. I'm just going to lay on it. I'm going to let her bet. And then I'm going to just call. And then, boom, I'm going to lay the hammer down, right? And, of course, you get that hand, and boom. And then she goes, boom, boom. I'm like, are you kidding me? You flopped a set there, woman. How does that happen? How did you get that lucky?
Wow. It always happens that way, too. It happens to me a lot online. You sit there and you got this guy on your right who just won't leave you alone, and you finally wake up with kings and you shove and he has aces. They're like, what? There's no way you have aces there. And he does. I hate that.
All right, but more seriously, here's my real problem with these people. She was exactly opposite from me on the table. All right, so normally if you have, like, you know, like Chatty Carlos, he's right to my right. So when they're that close, you can adjust your game to kind of avoid them or play just against them, right?
Right.
But they're on the other side of the table with, like, four people in between you on each side. What do you do? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't, if you know, hey, I don't know what she's going to do. She's probably going to 3-bet, 6-bet, 7-bet, I don't know. So I don't want to get in the hand. And then, of course, she folds. They're like, oh, I should have been in the hand. So I don't know. Any advice for a frustrating player who is a polar opposite to you on the table?
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that you introduced a subject that you said you're going to have wisdom for all three of these things, and now you're asking me for the advice?
I added quotes around wisdom. we play the tape.
Oh man, I you know, I just ignore her after that. I just play my hands the way I need to play them, and if she's gonna 3-bet me, then I'm going to decide if my hand's worth a 4-bet or a call or.
All right, well, that's fine. But let's say you've got a, you know, you don't want to be just raising with your best hands, right? So let's say you're, you know, part of your repertoire is to, if you're first one in, you're raising with Jack 10 or, you know, 8-9 of hearts or something like that. Are you still going to be playing that way against somebody that very likely is going to 3-bet you?
Well, if I'm willing to make a raise with that hand, and I know this person's going to 3-bet me, then why don't I just call with that hand, let them make the first bet, and then I just call again. That's my raise, and then
okay, so that's what I'm saying. So you're not playing your game.
No, you adjust. Yeah, you adjust if you know that player is going to enter every pot. Of course you adjust.
Hmm.
You telling me you don't adjust your game to players around you? Of course you do.
Oh, I do, but I like to adjust my play to players based on the information I have and how I can optimally play against them.
Right. Well, I think that's.
And there's
the
no
right
way
right.
You can optimally play against someone that is just literally crazy.
Well, if there are hands that you like to speculate with and you like to raise with, and you know that you're always going to get 3-bet with them, then if you want to play those hands and you can't play them for 3 or 4 bets, then you're going to have to limp with them and wait till they raise, and then you just call. I mean, that's the way you have to. If you want to get in and you want to play those hands, isn't that what you do? I mean, otherwise, you're going to get in this raising war.
Hands. I'm just saying you were saying, hey, I'm going to play my normal game, and I'm saying I don't think you can play your normal game when somebody like this is at the table.
Well, what I mean is I'm not going to just target that person. I'm going to play my normal game, and then if this person continues to get into my face, and I'm going to adjust my game, which is normal, what I normally would do is adjust for that player. But in the way I would is the way I just said. But I'm not going to just totally ignore the other 8 people at my table and worry about this one woman or man who's 3-betting and playing weird, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. But, I mean, but you know, it's a game of information, right? And
yeah.
You know that this person is likely going to raise or make weird calls or things like that. I mean, that's part of what goes into your knowledge. So you're not targeting just that one person. You've got to try to figure out what that person – but I guarantee you the other 8 people at the table were thinking the same thing about this player as I was.
Right.
And so you have to factor in, if I'm not gunning for this person, maybe somebody else is gunning at this person.
Yeah.
And there was. I mean, they got into some hands. She had a fondness for Chatty Carlos, which is great. I would love to see that spawn at some point. And they literally got their hands all in with no pairs, like 3 times.
Jeez.
Just because they wanted to knock each other out. So, I mean, when you're in the middle of that firestorm, it's really tough, I think.
Yeah, that's a tough situation. But I guess the old thing you fall back on is trapping. You know, but even then, you have to pick up a hand to do it, and it's always the hand they have a bigger hand or the hand that they don't have a hand that only fold. You know,
I mean, you can't. There's nothing you do about that. Yeah. But it's just frustrating. All right, well, a tournament before that. Boy, this has been on the nose for a couple of weeks. We must have had a lot of good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we did.
because now I can't even remember this hand very well. But I do remember coming home from this tournament, calling you, and you're like, Chris, I just played the absolute worst hand of poker ever. And I still recovered to make the final table. And not cash.
That one of those 11-player tournaments where all you had to do was survive one person?
No, I think this was like 30 or 40 people.
Okay.
And I'm not even going to begin to try to defend this absolutely atrocious hand that I played. It was so bad that three people at the table called my hand out when I folded.
They all said what you had?
Yes. So they absolutely, not only did I not win the hand, but I played it so poorly that I should have just had my cards face up because everybody knew what they were, and ended up losing it. But here's what I learned about it. What it was is I had a straight draw. I think I had like something like 8-9, and there's a 10 and 7 on the board. And I believe I had raised pre-flop, getting frisky or something, and have smooth called by someone, and then I flopped the open-ended, so I bet, and I got re-raised, and then I decided to call. I don't know. A lot of bad things happen in this hand, right?
Right.
But ultimately, I just called off a lot of my chips on a draw, which is the last thing you want to do.
Right.
You want to push with it. What I should have done when the guy re-raised me is just pushed on him, put him to a test. As it turns out, he had pocket queens. A king came on the turn, so if I would have pushed, I probably would have got him off. But no, I'm like, I'll just call and see if I hit my straight. Bad, 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 bad. And of course I missed. So he mucked, and the people went, 9-8? Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Yeah, I guess it wasn't that hard. But what I learned from it was my style of game, which I don't advocate for anyone, obviously, but what I'm comfortable with, I was able to make that kind of move because I knew I wasn't going to be hurt fatally by it. Right. Does that make sense?
Knowing your game, right?
I was able to call off half of my stack on a draw on the hopes that I'd hit it, and then I'd have a lot of chips that could play a different game. And if I missed, then I'm comfortable playing with that half a stack. Whereas other people I don't think are comfortable playing with that half a stack, they would have made that same move, they would have got upset of themselves, and they would have shoved the next hand with 7-deuce. And would have been joining Chatty Carlos at the bar.
With the spawn.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you're saying is you're comfortable at any stage for your stack or tournament, and that you'll make moves based on, okay, well, if it doesn't work out, I can still go into my short stack ninja move and survive that way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's part of it. I guess the larger discussion, though, is when we're watching people on TV or if you're railing someone and you go, oh, my gosh, you see that play? That was terrible. Mm. It may not be terrible because that player is making the move based on how he or she knows his own style and whether he can recover from it or not. So on the surface, you might have 9 out of 10 people say it's terrible, but for that particular player's game, it actually made sense.
Hmm. So were they ridiculing you at the table?
No, because I never said I had 9-8. You know, I did one of those, I don't remember, you know, that kind of crud, even though I'm like, you know, I had 9-8 painted on my forehead.
And your cards flashed when you were folding them. And
well, you know, the other thing, too, is, I mean, you're talking about adjusting. At that point, when I realized I played that badly, I realized that these people knew what I had and knew that I played it badly. And then you can use that information later on. And I'm like, you know, hey, I'm not necessarily known as a wild, loose player. But then all of a sudden I got that reputation from these three guys, and I ended up outlasting all three of them. I don't know whether that played into it or not, but certainly recognizing when you make these mistakes, how you can turn them around and make them advantageous for you. I guess that's the last lesson.
Well, the question I have, and you may not like this, but on your notes you say that you were not hurt fatally by it. And I understand fatally means you didn't go out. Is what you're saying when you say you didn't get eliminated by the way you played that
or
hand?
Or got turned myself into a desperate shove fist.
Okay.
Person.
Because when I play a tournament, and I guess it's evidenced by Apes last night, I mean, I played cautiously the whole way. I played optimally the whole way. And then I chose a hand that I felt like would put me in contention to win the tournament rather than just limp into the final table and make a couple bucks or maybe not even make any money. And ultimately, a lot, you've been saying this a lot lately, is, yeah, you're not fatally wounded by the way you're playing your hands, but you certainly aren't making the money either. You know what I mean? You're,
right.
You're making final tables, but you're still going home without cash. And I just wonder if that is a defense or not by saying, yeah, I played it a certain way and I'm still comfortable playing the short stack ninja, but you may be comfortable doing it, but how successful are you doing it? And maybe you shouldn't think that way. I'm just being devil's
advocate. I am absolutely agree with you. I mean, because I, in the notes here, I mentioned non-optimally. So I know I'm not playing optimally.
Yeah,
and I know I should be playing optimally. So, yeah, it's not a defense. It's not, hey, everybody, call off all your chips on a stupid draw that everybody knows you have. Because you could play a short stack. That, absolutely not. I guess the point is that, you know, I know my own game, so I know I can recover from that kind of mistake, even though I shouldn't make that mistake in the first place.
Okay. Yeah. It's,
yes,
it's
I am learning from this.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. And it's funny, you know, we talked about on the ship where, you know, I said, you know, I don't push all in with my draws anymore, Scott. And then like twice while you're at my table, I did it.
Twice? It was like seven times. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
No, not many
times. Poor dealer had to duck out of the way because your nose was like growing entire cruise.
And I paid for it, didn't I?
Yeah.
I will never do it again. So, interesting troika of information you gave us there.
I appreciate calling interesting. I know it really wasn't.
Your favorite segment of the show, feedback, I think I'll take this one.
This is interesting.
This is, yeah. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce this guy's last name.
That's good, because he probably didn't give us permission to use his last name. So let's just call him Don.
All right, Don. Apparently, we've been banned from his work.
Why would you do that to us, Don?
He said, this just might be confirmation that you guys have made it big time. AnnieUpMagazine.com is blocked on his company content filter as a gambling site.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess you're gambling with your chances of playing quality poker if you listen to us. But, wow, that's pretty interesting. He says, now we've joined the ranks of Card Player Bluff and probably Degenerate Gamblers Monthly.
Oh, I love that.
He would never dream of accessing Poker Stars at work, but those are just information magazines, so he's baffled by it. He says, I have worked on projects that deal with these content filters and have tried to explain the difference between a gambling site, one where you can make wagers, from an information site. They don't care, feel gambling is gambling. They can't explain why football betting lines, fantasy football, or coverage of March Madness are not gambling related. Those are just things for fun. ESPN is special, and anything they cover is fine. Why is that? How is checking the winner of a tournament last week any different than looking up football scores from last week? Just boils down to gambling is bad. That just burns my toast, he said.
I love it, Doc.
Yeah, you know, it absolutely is true. I mean, it's fascism, I think, really, to be honest with you. I can't imagine how people think that sports, you know, people think, oh, sports, oh, they're great. They're at, no, they're there for people to gamble. And that's why they put the line in the newspaper. That's why they print the results. That's why they're getting all the hits, because people want to see who won the game and see if they covered the spread. You know what I mean? You can look at that, but you can't see who won the Bellagio Cup on our site. You know, what the hell?
Well, I mean, this goes. This is a real problem. I love when I go to like airports or hotels or something, and I click the little agreement thing, and it tells me, you know, what sites I can go to or not. I'm like, yeah, see ya. Woohoo! Bing, 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 bing. Playing whatever I want to do. But, you know, some of them do put these blockers up, and it's, you know, it's a no-win game for these people because, you know, you can't block everything, and you end up catching a lot of tuna in the dolphin net.
Yeah.
Dolphin in the tuna net.
I think we need to come up with a website name like itsallskill.com or something, and just, you know, I mean, people can, it'll be like an alias for our site. People can go on there and look at it because no one's going to, you know, if they see Annie up in the title, they think it's gambling, so that's why they block it. But if it's something like, you know, momsmacrame.com or something. You know what I mean?
I'm going to say workerproductivityplus.com. Learn how to be the best worker you can be.
Yeah. How not to waste the company's money and time.com.
Yeah. It's just like those little fake spreadsheet programs that pop up over your solitaire game.
Yes, exactly. Well, I guess we made it big time, and I'm glad Don alerted us to that. Maybe we should come up with a different website name. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe go on tour 2 Live Crew now. Banned in 46 states or something.
Oh, man, that's pretty bad. Pretty bad that we can't even come up on regular sites now. All we are is an information site. It's sad. Absolutely sad.
All right, we got a great mailbag this week, Chris. Comes from, and I love this too because he gave me a pronunciation for his name.
He knows.
And I'm 97% sure I'm still going to mess it up.
All right, go ahead.
All right, first name is Nestor. I nailed that.
Yep.
Totally nailed that. Last name, Inohosa.
That's perfect.
It's not perfect because I was slow with it.
That's perfect. You're slow in life anyway, so no one will even recognize it.
Inohosa.
Inohosa.
Now it sounds like I'm making fun of. It seems like I'm talking like Japanese from World War II there. That's for Inohosa. There we go.
Very good.
That was about as best as I can get.
Even bordering on like some objectionable material.
That's what I'm saying. It's tough.
I don't know how you're going to get away with this, but go ahead.
All right. This is what Nestor. How's that?
Yeah.
Our buddy Nestor wrote in. He says, enjoying your podcast immensely. He must not work with Don.
I was going to say either that or he's definitely not Dan Druff.
He says, you two crack me up. Your show is the Dan Patrick Show, a poker podcast.
Wow, that is like a huge compliment. I don't think it's true, but it's a huge compliment.
Wow.
I have way too much respect for Dan Patrick to agree with that, but that's a great, great thing.
Oh, we love you, Nestor. He says, I've noticed you mention Gresham Mall a lot. Oh, yes, I do.
You do. I don't.
Well, you know. He says, yes, I love during rounders, but did you know that Fetch and Gretchen starred as Betty Page and the notorious Betty Page? Thought I might pass that on to you if you didn't already know. I did not know that.
How did you not know that? I thought like at night you just sat there and stared at her page on IMDb.
Yeah, you know what? But it makes sense. She looks a lot like the notorious Betty Page.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess yeah. She does. Yeah, I guess so.
I'm never going to convince you that Fetchin' Gretchen is actually Fetchin', but she's a new mom too, by the way. Does that help?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. All right. But anyhow, that's not what you call it. Redman. This is his actual question. He says, maybe you've covered this already in a previous podcast. Boy, I wish we did.
Me too.
But I'm still a little fuzzy in the terms pot odds versus pot equity and their respective meanings. Says in another poker podcast, during a bad beat story, I heard a poker pro berate a poker room fish because the fish sucked out on him on Fish Street, and the fish told him, quote, I had to call because I had pot odds. To which the other two or three podcast pro announcers burst out in laughter, Chris. Kind of made it sound like there's no such thing as pot odds and only donks think that way. Is there an easy black and white explanation between the terms? Thanks. Keep up the great work.
Okay, I'm going to say a couple of things here. One, really.
It's first going to be if he wants a black and white explanation, he should talk to Rant or Gundam.
Exactly.
Because they're the kings of black and white explanations.
Generally, when people ask for stuff like this, there are a lot more intelligent ways to find the answer than to ask Scott or me to figure something out for you. I mean, you just go into Google and type in pot odds, pot equity. You'll find tons of articles. There's one on the Blind Squirrel site. There are a lot. So you can easily find out what the difference is. Also, what I was told about what it is that pot odds are, you know, when you're trying to find out what the pot is paying you during a hand where there's still going to be some betting. And I think pot equity has a lot to do with when someone's all in, how much is it going to call you to call the all in? And if the percentage that you think you're behind is worse or better than, you know, worse than how much money you're getting out of the pot, then, you know, if you have more money, if you, you know, in other words, a third of the pot, say you're getting 33%, you think you're 33% to favor to win the hand, and for you to call, you have 44% invested in the pot, then it's a good call because you're getting more money than the odds it is against you hitting it. That's what pretty much what pot equity is, but I really don't, really, really don't know, and that's not the most clear way to present it, so really just look it up and tell us, because that's,
wow,
I mean, that's essentially what it is, but
beginning of the show, we thought, hey, we're not even going to touch
it. I know. I know.
Right into it.
I'm sorry. Well, you know what it is? The reason why I thought I'd do it, because at the end when you read this and it said the guy was all in and he said he had pot as they left, I was thinking it's because when someone's all in and you know exactly what it's going to cost you, then it's pot equity. But at the other way, it's odds because there's more betting after that. And so that's what I was thinking, that's what they mean by equity versus odds. So I had to throw that in there. But really, I really don't know the difference. They're very similar. Just look it up.
Just look it up. Or I'm sure you can go to antantmagazine.com/forum, and there's going to be lots of discussion about this week. But no, I'm going to add here that I don't know what this other show was, but generally when I hear pros laughing at fish over pod odds, it's because, as I've said on shows before, people use pod odds as an excuse to make bad calls. Yeah. And obviously we don't know all the details on this particular hand, but that's probably my guess.
Yeah. Says,
hey, I had pot odds, so I had a call, and when they had nothing even close to pot odds to make the call. But it sounds impressive, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we're in the March Madness now. It's like, it sounds impressive to say, oh, yeah, I had South Dakota A&M Tech in the first round, even though you've never watched a college basketball game the entire year. So well, same thing.
The terms themselves kind of lend themselves to the answer in a way. I mean, the odds that you can win the pot versus the equity you have invested in the pot, there's a difference. So, you know what I mean? That's kind of the way you'll get to the answer eventually. It's just, you know, there's really no black and white way of describing it. But really, you just type in those words into a Google search, and you'll find all you need to know about it. And whether it be clear or not, well, that's beyond me. But you can easily find people out there trying to explain it better than we can.
And pretty soon we'll post the answer to workerproductivitypro.com. You can read about it at work. But Nestor, we appreciate the pronunciation guide above all else. Always like hearing about my girl Fetch and Gretchen as well. And our listeners absolutely love it when you pose hard questions that we have no idea how to answer, but we try to answer them anyhow. So for all of that, we are happy to send you a deck of the J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up, now available in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com.
You know, you'd think that when we were on a ship for a week, we'd come home, people would be calling us because they're missing us or something. But really, we really didn't have any hotlines this week. You know, one of our friends and columnists called in to bust on you a little bit about your hand, I think, from the end of the week. But he couldn't finish it in a minute, so we're not playing it.
We're not going to play it?
We're not playing it.
Yeah, all right.
He couldn't finish his thought. That's not enough.
No, I thought it was funny that he calls it and says, I want to talk about that hand for just a second, and then can't finish his thought in 1 minute.
But if you do call it, we'll give you something. It's 813-448-1120. It's an interesting number. It's not exactly local for a lot of you, but you know what? You have a cell phone. You have Skype. Somehow you can call, so why aren't you doing it? Give us a call. We'll give you something cool.
What does local even mean anymore? You know, I was watching War Games last night. I'm not going to get off on this tangent about Ali Sheedy or anything, but you know, he was at a payphone booth, and I love that.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, what a! I mean, back then you had to each put a quarter in even to call across the street.
You know, and how many millions of kids tried that little pull tab way that he got the thing to give him a free dial tone? How bull was that?
Well, and how many kids are watching this movie now and going, what the heck did he find? What is that thing that he picked up out of the ground?
Yeah, the pull tab, I know. Of course, you're actually assuming that kids around today are watching a movie called War Games where they got to use those two big suction cups to get on the, whatever that is, internet, sort of, whatever that thing is. And
CompuServe.
Yeah, there's no way.
Oh, all right. But if you call that hotline, we'll be happy to give you a great piece of swag. Maybe even a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net.
Very cool. Well, we got some stuff to talk about. You know, our cruise is just over, but it doesn't matter. We got another one coming up. That's the thing about booking a bunch of cruises during the year. There's always going to be one coming up.
Always thinking about the boat. And for this next one coming up, we already have 35 staterooms reserved, Chris.
Now, when you say that, what do you mean?
That means we have commitments from a couple poker rooms to give away that many, and then we already have some booked.
Excellent, excellent.
So it's going to be a big one. Hopefully it'll be bigger than the October one that we had 242 people on. But,
yeah,
a lot of buzz.
We still have 5 months before we sail, and we've already got a minimum of 70 people coming. That's huge.
Not bad. Go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise for all the details. This one's only $369 a person, so almost anybody can afford it.
Nice and cheap, and there's a airport nearby, and it's in the center of the state, so you could drive up, drive down if you live in Florida. Or if you live in Canada, you can make the 36-hour drive like some do, which is unbelievable to me.
Absolutely,
I still can't believe
yeah.
It.
I don't want to say this because it's going to upset Wes now, but we probably should have a contest at some point. The person that drives the farthest gets a free cruise.
Let's not go that far. Pardon my pun.
And, of course, remember, our AnnieUp store is up at AnnieUpStore.com, and dozens of great poker products, including some great AnnieUp logo items, and we'll hopefully be adding some more stuff to that very soon.
Let's hear what's piling up on the AnnieUp news desk this week.
All right, spoiler alert here. If you're one of those people like Chris used to be and want to watch the NBC National Heads Up Championship and be surprised at the winner, it's now time to crash your car if you live in Denver or do something else so you don't listen for the next 47 seconds.
Now, what about the people who want to fast forward over the housekeeping and now they've stumbled into the middle of this news item and didn't hear your spoiler alert? Now they're going to hear.
They listen at their own peril if they don't want to listen to every gem that we put on the show.
Tell me who won.
All right. Eric Seidel, who has won about every big money buy-in tournament over the past few months, has added the NBC National Heads Up Poker Championship to his trophy case. Seidel beat Chris Moneymaker 2-0 in the best of three final. After starting his NBC career with five straight losses, he has now won 11 of his last 12 matches over the past 2 years, Chris.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. He finished runner-up to Annie Duke, and then he wins it. And it seems like that's the way they go in this thing. They go in cycles like that with Ferguson and Helmuth or whatever. I mean, it's pretty remarkable how if you did well the year before, you're likely going to win it the next year. I mean, that seems to be the pattern.
Yeah, just like Joshua in War Games, they're learning.
Oh, my God, you keep coming back to the damn War Games.
And I was very lucky to be able to catch up with Eric after this after his win, and I asked him whether he was disappointed with the turnout.
The size of the field.
Yes.
Which has to be 64 players. Oh, man, you're killing me.
Oh, but seriously, I'm happy for my man Chris Moneymaker here, all right? I've always been kind of an underdog kind of rooter.
Yeah.
And I think I probably said on the show before, too, I think Moneymaker gets a bad rap because every person who's ever played a game of poker now thinks that he's lucky and he sucks. And, of course, all those people saying that have fewer World Series titles than he does.
That's right.
And it's nice to see that he actually ran through. This is a very difficult field once you get past Emmett Smith. it's good to see him. I mean, even though he didn't win and make it to the final, kudos to the accountant from Tennessee.
All right. Well, Nevada is the latest state to introduce an intrastate online poker bill, though its bill differs from ones being considered in other states, in that it allows poker sites that continue to service U.S. players after the UIGEA went into effect to offer their games in the state if the bill becomes law. What do you think about that, Scott?
I like it. I like it. That means our good friends and sponsors, PokerStars, could be part of this Nevada interstate system if it passes. Very much different than, you know, here in Florida, where those big established sites would not be welcome to be part of it. So, for us players that play on these sites a lot and don't want to try a different site, that's good news. Now, whether it actually gets anywhere is a completely different story.
Right. Exactly.
All right, finally, Darvin Moon, the Mr. Everyman logger who finished second in the World Series of Poker main event 2 years ago and has spurned all endorsement offers, has signed an agreement with the Heartland Poker Tour, playing events and wear HPT logos wherever he plays.
Very interesting.
I wonder if they're going to have a Heartland Poker Tour event at the Superdome this year.
This is kind of weird, though. I mean, I obviously I love Darvin Moon, and I've had numerous conversations with him. And you know, it's funny, he wouldn't wear anything at the World Series final table, and he always says that, you know, things wouldn't change him, but there he is signing an endorsement deal with someone. It's kind of weird.
Well, you know, I think, I mean, I don't remember every interview he's obviously ever given, but I think most of it was the endorsements he was getting were online sites, and the guy doesn't play online.
Yeah.
Never played online, as far as I know.
Right.
So, I mean, it's almost like one of those, I mean, there's a fine line. You've got endorsement whores out there. Oh, yeah, give me money. I'll tell you, I'm in favor of Metamucil. Use it every night. I don't care. Make the check out, too. And then you've got people on the other spectrum like him that say, you know what, if I'm going to put my name to something, I want it to be something that I believe in.
Yeah.
And if I don't play online, you know, why am I endorsing a site that I don't ever play on? Whereas the Heartland Poker Tour he's played in and really kind of actually fits his image, you know.
I mean, he doesn't
I don't think
he's
selling out at all. I think
he doesn't need the money.
Just, I mean, I hate when people say that because everybody needs money.
It's true. That's true, but if I had 5 million of it, I don't think I would need it as badly as
well,
those
others. But I don't, you know, and I don't know. He wasn't really quoted in the
story.
Interesting and expected, probably,
right.
Knowing him. But I think he just kind of likes the Heartland Poker Tour. You know, if you kind of like it, and someone says, you know, hey, if you like it, I'll like it a little bit more for us, and we'll give you a little money. What's wrong with that? That's
No. And like I said, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just thought it was interesting that he generally doesn't go for the sponsorship thing, and now he is, so I wonder what changed his mind.
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, Scott, I wish that this interview actually happened like this week so I could have talked to her about her high-stakes poker hand from a couple
and
of weeks ago.
I wish you could, too. I haven't even seen this hand, but it came up like 3 times on our cruise.
Yeah.
So, like, so, everybody but me has seen this hand. But fortunately, since you talked about it on the show, I was actually able to fake intelligence.
But you know what? It was still a fascinating interview nonetheless. I got to talk with Vanessa Selbst, the PokerStars team pro who attends Yale. For my old neck of the woods, you know, I went to a college in New Haven as well, just not that one. But we had a nice little conversation before the actual interview too, and talked about the snow and life in New Haven, and she actually reveals a lot of very interesting things about her, and including you know, how she feels about police officers, and I thought that was very telling and very interesting, a nice in-depth conversation with her. So. Without delay, here is my talk with Vanessa Selbst, who is coming off probably her greatest year of her career. All right, so let's face it, 2010 was an amazing year for you. You had 2 major live victories and about $3 million in live tournament winnings. What do you attribute to the great run?
Well, you know, obviously there's just a ton of luck and variance, and whenever I run like that, you know, I had a lot of good luck at the final tables. Which is really important. I mean, I think, you know, skill and I think what I attribute to getting to those that deep in that many tournaments, you know, I guess like 3 majors I was pretty deep in,
right.
Was, you know, just sort of learning how to be more patient at the tables. Mohegan Sun, I had kind of a breakthrough moment where they did like there was a mishap with the tournament scheduling, and essentially there was like a little room of all late registrants that was about 75 people big, and they decided to essentially play a mini tournament in that room until there were enough people to put them in the main room with all of the online qualifiers and PokerStars players and all of that.
Uh-huh.
So it was really weird and messed up because it was like we were playing our own little mini 25K World Championship of Poker, trying to break into like the 5K main event with all the online qualifiers, and I think at that point it really sunk in for me just how bad my table draw was relative to the rest of the field. I mean, I'd always known that concept existed of waiting for a better spot, but in practice it was hard. It's, you know, sometimes hard to say, okay, well, I'll get a better table later. But here it was more than clear. I had like every superstar at my table, and it was just not a tough field. And so I just waited it out, and honestly, after that table broke, I just didn't have any hands, so I didn't try to force the issue. And I left with my starting stack and just went on an absurd heater the rest of the day and ended the day, actually, in those last 2 hours, went from starting stack to chip leader.
Wow.
And so that, for me, was a breakthrough moment on waiting for better spots. And I think that was always the thing that I struggled with beforehand, was sort of playing too aggressively and just making too many bluffs in unnecessary spots. And while I'm obviously still aggressive and I obviously still bluff a lot, I've toned it down considerably where I'm not just busting out of every tournament by bluffing. So I think that that is why I've learned how to get deep in these big stacked events. And then, you know, obviously some run good at the final tables has led me to be able to take them down.
Wow. Well, you know, you brought up the Mohegan Sun, and you and I were talking a little bit earlier that, you know, you live in New Haven, you go to school at Yale, and how special was it winning the NAPT event at Mohegan Sun since you live in that state?
Yeah, it was amazing to win here. You know, I had my friends from law school that were able to come up and watch me, and it was really amazing for that reason. But also, honestly, I probably wouldn't have played it otherwise. You know, I think – it's funny because I just didn't really play any poker other the first semester of school. I played Aussie Millions because we had a Deuces Crack training trip out there where we were teaching seminars. And then Mohegan Sun was the next event I played in April. You know, and then I wouldn't even play another event until basically the World Series Poker main event. And so I also like trying to get that. I'm making that point because I got tilted at some magazine article or something online that I read that was like, well, Vanessa Selbst did not have an impressive World Series. I was like, it's really hard to win events when you're not playing them and doing league literature. But, you know, so it was funny because I just didn't really, I just got lucky at the right times and I was only able to play the events that were close to home. So it was just really amazing to run well there and have everything sort of take off from there.
Well, you know, before we talk a little more about some of the national and worldwide events, you know, I read an article once, and it might have been Time Magazine or Sports Illustrated, but there was an interview with a poker player who said that some of the cash games at Yale were really juicy. Did you play cash games on campus, and did you take down any trust funds?
Well, they were juicy, but not trust fund material, I would say. You know, they're juicy for a college game. It's definitely Yale cash games are where I got my start. You know, I met some really amazing players that were very talented and very into poker, and I was the fish when I joined the game, and sort of they turned me on to online poker forums, to 2+2, and actually one of my friends from that table is someone that I work with on Deuces Cracked, Ariel Schneller, who's known as Foxwoods Fiend online. He's a very successful high stakes cash game player online.
Right.
And so it was through that table that I got my start. We were playing 1-1 blinds, but you know, there'd be straddles and stuff, and I think on any given night, people would lose, you know, a few $100 here and there, which for a college game was nothing to shake a stick at.
Right. Okay, so then how did the fields differ from your NAPT event win to your recent Partouche victory in Cannes, you know, as far as, like, style and final tables and things like that?
Well, the styles, I would say, the structure of the tournament made them just vastly different tournaments, honestly, in my opinion.
Okay.
Partouche was an hour and a half levels on the first day, followed by 2-hour levels after that. So it really was just like you did not have to force the issue at all. You could just wait and wait and let something happen. That's not really my style, but I noticed that it was other people's style. And then subsequently, I could actually – I almost like amped up my aggression because I noticed that people were more content to wait on things and wait for a better spot. Mohegan Sun, well, it's funny because I guess I played super crazy in that one too, only because people were playing less passively, so I had to play even more crazy to get them to fold. So I guess my style didn't really change that much, but it was just a shorter stack tournament, and I think that the competition was probably a little bit more talented at Mohegan Sun as a whole. You know, poker's been around in the U.S. for a little bit longer, and I think that field was a little bit tougher. It's getting more popular over in Europe, and I think Partouche in this third year, people finally heard about it because from what I heard, the first and second years, the fields were just incredibly, incredibly soft. I didn't, you know, I definitely experienced some tough players, especially as the field thinned out. I thought there were some very good players at the final table. So, you know, I guess, yeah, that's my assessment. I was saying Mohegan Sun was a little bit tougher of a field and shorter of a structure.
Okay. Now you have an NAPT title, you have a World Series bracelet, you have a Partouche Poker Tour title. How important is winning a World Poker Tour event to you, especially, you know, a main event?
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. I mean, you should ask me, how important is it to you to cash a World Poker Tour event? And I would say that would be awesome. Let's try it out. I've played about maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 main events, probably about 15 by now. I played a lot in 2007 when I was just awful at these events. And then I've played about three or four this year, I guess, and gotten deep in a couple of them and then just didn't have the, I guess, got unlucky in a couple of situations late. And so I have been unable to make any money. I guess, I mean, I got second in a WPT ladies event, if that counts. But But otherwise, I haven't been able to cash a main event. And so I would love to do that. But, you know, in terms of a title, you know, I love winning. I love winning tournaments. I think titles are great. You know, people remember the first place person. And right. I'm also really closing tournaments. So it's something that I hold myself in esteem for. I mean, it's something that is important to me. That's a skill that I have. I'm very good at shorthanded. And, you know, it is a very important skill. You don't make many final tables. And there's, you know, if you make 10 final tables and come in third or fourth, or you make three and come in first, you're breaking even, right. essentially.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a huge skill to get good at shorthanded play and be able to close final tables. So, you know, let's see what happens when I make it to a World Poker Tour event final table or two. And in that case, I think it would be incredibly important, you know, but there's a lot more, you know, the WPT is important and historically important event, but honestly, there's a lot more circuits out there too that are becoming almost bigger. Like the European Poker Tour is just getting huge. And I think for me, it would almost be more special when an EPT, because those fields are just so much bigger nowadays, you know?
Yeah, well, I guess one of the reasons I ask too is I talked to Jonathan Little recently, and he was saying how he felt WPT titles are a little more important than, say, World Series bracelets because there are fewer WPT titles to be won. And I just wondered how you felt about that. Do you feel like it's the ESPN marketing tool that makes the World Series seem so much more valuable, or is it just because the World Poker Tour doesn't have that many titles?
Right. I think the reason the World Series title seems so valuable is both marketing and historical nature of it. You know, once upon a time, it was like the only real big tournament series out there.
Right.
And so it was the most important. And I think just having that historical aspect, which is thus been played up through the media and through marketing, is why people sort of value it so highly. But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because they value it so highly, more people play, and then it becomes a valuable thing, you know. At the end of the day, the structures are much worse. They're 3-day tournaments as opposed to 5 or 6-day tournaments. You're not getting as much poker. There's a lot more luck involved.
Right.
You know, people ask me, how did you win an APT Mohegan Sun in part 2? She said, I think I played my A game. I made some really crazy sick moves. Like, I can recall at least 3 hands for both of those that I just thought that I just mastery, you know, which I can't say for myself in other events. And World Series, they asked me, how'd you win? And I said, hey, I got aces in PLO and held every single time. You know,
yeah.
So I do think that the deeper stacked events are more prestigious for actual poker players. And I do think for that reason that I would also agree that WPT events are definitely, you know, I would value those more than I would value a bracelet. I mean, I know the bracelet has so much more with it in terms of, I guess, your poker resume, but it really is, I think, more impressive to win one of those deeper stack, whether it's WPT or an EPT.
Okay.
Or, you know, WSOP circuit or whatever, just a longer event, I guess.
Well, you brought up the WPT ladies event, and, you know, I remember watching that on television, and you were literally brought to tears when you were heads up with Nancy Todd Tyner. That was, what, 2008? And, you know, you could just see the frustration on your face. How frustrated were you in that match, and have you ever been that frustrated since?
No, I mean, tears might be a slight exaggeration, but, I was frustrated, but it wasn't just the poker. I mean, the poker was frustrating because she was god awful and just winning every single hand. But it was her antics. And this is just something that I've just given up trying to explain to people because it sounds like I'm making excuses for myself and I don't care enough. You know, if people want to think that I'm a terrible person and I, you know, am really rude to everyone at the tables, you know, that's fine. That's how ESPN wants to market me. Good for them. I'm glad I get the airtime, you know. But at the end of the day, the actual story is that she was incredibly rude to me and slow-rolled me and had all these antics and was taunting me and saying things to me. And she was really good friends with one of the guys who was one of the WPT executives. And they basically edited out everything, like all of her antics, and left in all of mine, which was just sort of astonishing and shocking when I was watching the broadcast to see what you could do through editing. That it was just sort of like a really tough lesson to learn in a really hard and nationally televised way. And so that was the source of my frustration, I would say, mostly, you know, 80% just her being so, I guess, cocky in what she was doing while she was so bad at poker. But yeah, I mean, I've also matured a lot since then in terms of my poker. I mean, I don't know that I could have beaten her with my cards even in 2010. I do think that I adopted a good strategy, which was never bluffing and just value betting fourth pair, knowing that I was value betting and knowing it was good.
Right.
It's never made fourth pair. So, you know, it's one of those things where you know, I'm definitely a much better player now. I don't get nearly as frustrated. I've taken a lot worse beats. Aussie Millions actually was televised, but the broadcast was so terrible this year at Aussie Millions that, like, it was just – I couldn't even watch it because it was just, like, they didn't even show – they didn't show whose cards were shown first and who was first to act and how much you were betting. It was essentially, like, a bunch of monkeys film poker and just decided to air it for all their monkey friends and were just in awe over the colors of the cards or something. But, you know, I lost there with 98% equity or something like that. And, it, you know – maintain my composure and was just like not upset about it. So I do think there's a maturity factor there as well, and have not gotten as frustrated since then. That's for sure.
Well, I checked your Hendon Mob stats, and I think that event was one of only two ladies tournaments that you've cashed in, and it's probably because you don't play that many. I'm not really sure, but some women are in favor of ladies events while others frown on them. Can you tell me what your stance is, and do you still enter them?
Sure. Well, I've cashed three, I think, because I got a series final table. I won one, and I got second in one.
Okay.
So I think I've cashed three, and they were all final tables. So that's the only reason I take issue. If I'd min cash, I wouldn't care. But, you know, I don't care about this whole stupid debate. I think that ladies' events are great. You know, they bring more women into poker. People love them, whether or not they even bring more people into poker. So many – there's 1,000 women every year that look forward to – that one day during the World Series that they get to come and just have a fun time and play poker with each other. And I think that all this hubbub is just like, you know, it's funny because I'm not usually the one that says, oh, there's a political struggle here and it's all semantics and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm someone who's very principled and will often fight politically for things that I believe in. And this is just something that I don't believe that 99% of the people that take issue with this actually have any political inclinations at all. I've never heard them say anything about any issue that they care strongly about except for their own expected value.
Right.
You know, they're like, oh, like ladies events are terrible. This is misogynist and blah, blah, blah. And it's like majority of them just care that there's a soft tournament out there that they're not able to enter. You know, I think that they're fun events and I do play them sometimes, you know. Yeah. I've played maybe like five of them, I would say.
Okay.
Maybe five or six, I guess. I've played maybe three at the World Series and then those other two.
Right.
So, I mean, no, maybe one at Foxwoods also. Yeah, oh, and I cashed that one too. Jesus, no credit here. And
well,
so,
you know, that's Hendon Mob. That's not me, by the way. I only saw two on Hendon Mob, so that's why I was a little
thrown off. Double check that. Sure. But, yeah, so I play them when they're like, if I'm somewhere with nothing better to do or if they're big enough, which, you know, few of them are. But I do think that they, especially because they are lower buy-ins and people like me aren't even playing them because – it's just not worth it for my time.
Right.
You know, I think it's a good way for beginners that might be intimidated otherwise to get into poker. And I do think there's some merit to that because I've seen the way women get treated at the table and it's frankly disgusting sometimes.
Yeah. Well, how's your relationship with PokerStars going?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
I love PokerStars. The best online poker company in the world. No, seriously, they really are. It's really awesome. I mean, they're a really great group of people. Just couldn't be happier with everything. They run some really great tournaments. Their staff is just exceptional. Support, everything. I just could not be happier.
Are you going to start your own home game?
I'm told that I should do that.
Okay. Well, you know, I figure sometimes, you know, you might have friends back home at Yale where you're traveling the world and you're just chilling in a hotel or something and you want to play with your buddies or whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
No, it's true. Home games are really, really cool. I am, you know, don't actually play that much with people at home anymore, with law school people, because everyone's intimidated. But home games are really cool. And I thought about it in this way that you could actually, like, we could almost recreate our old Yale home game maybe, you know, our old, like, undergrad home game from, you know, way back when. And that would be kind of fun. So I'm definitely going to look into setting something like that up.
Now, tell me about Deuces Cracked. I'm actually looking at the photo of you right now on your Skype account, and you got a Deuces Cracked hoodie on. What's your relationship with them?
I'm an executive producer for them. So I've been with them since the inception in January 2008. Make videos, training videos, make a podcast called Tournamentality. I was sort of making videos a lot more than I used to, before. Now I'd say I'm going to be making about one a month or something like that. Mostly about tournament strategy. I'm going to be doing some cash game analysis. I'm hoping this year to launch a project where I take the big game footage and do analysis with maybe, you know, another very good cash game player. sort of like a voiceover commentary without, you know, sort of taking away, I guess, Stapes and Chris Rose and putting in our own commentary there.
Right.
So we'll see how that works out. It might be kind of, I think it'll be pretty fun and interesting. So I've been doing that. And then I also do private coaching, one-on-one, you know, either live poker coaching programs or online. So Juice is Cracked was sort of the vehicle through which I first found students. I would say more of them, or almost all of them, just contact me independently these days, knowing that I do coaching, just hearing it through outside sources. But anyway, that's what I do.
Okay, well, pretend I'm one of your students. I noticed that you had a lot of really excellent heads-up success. Can you tell me what would make a great heads-up player?
Fearlessness. Okay. And a good ability to read hands.
Now, how about online? Are you talking about like betting patterns when you say that?
Yeah, although honestly, online, you know, I'm like a wash-up for online heads-up. Like, I feel like I would get crushed if I went in there and tried to beat anything higher than 5-10 heads up these days, because the competition's just so damn good these days. And I haven't played in, you know, I was in law school for 2 years, just did not play any online poker,
right.
Barely played live. Lucky enough to come back and not be too rusty to take down some tournaments live. But I do feel like online has just gotten evolved to a new level where it's not that I couldn't beat it if I put in the time, but I just haven't, and I'm not interested in it. Because I can find bigger edges in other places. And I think it is, for me, it's a lot about reading people and seeing and reading what people are capable of to know what level they're on to outthink them. Like, I'm very good at sort of logic right away, you know, sort of figuring it out before my opponent does. And I think that's something that's really important and constantly adjusting. But for me, it's really hard online because it would just take a lot of work. Because I think what it comes down to is a lot of analyzing statistics. If you're really good at that, you can, with these programs, you can just figure out their game by just analyzing the statistics of it, you know. And not that I couldn't do that if I tried, but I think I'm almost just unwilling to put in the work right now. And I know a lot of people that are. And so I would say for online heads up and just online games in general, that is one of the things that would make a really great player, is just being able to do that.
Do you feel like having all those programs at your disposal when you're playing online hurts a live performance because you don't have that crutch or you don't have that backup notes kind of thing?
You know, you can ask, does one hurt the other, or does one, you know, does the other hurt the whatever, you know what I mean, like, or vice versa. And
right.
What it comes down to is it separates the game. It just polarizes them more. They're two different games. I mean, that's all there is to it. They're, you know, you can say poker and poker, but they're just different. And so I think, yeah, being better at one very different game hurts another, because if you focus for a long time on chess, you're going to get worse at backgammon because you're not focusing on it.
Right.
If you spend a ton of time focusing on both chess and backgammon, I don't think it's going to hurt. One's going to hurt the other. They're both strategy games. They both have pretty different strategy.
Right.
You know, maybe that's too far of a different, you know, question. But I guess maybe the better analogy is no limit and triple draw compared to live no limit and online no limit. I do think they're that different. And so, you know, as long as you spend your time working on both, I don't think it'll hurt. But I do think that they're very different games.
Okay. All right, my last question is, what's one thing you think that would surprise our audience about you?
I hate these kind of questions.
That's why I ask them.
Yeah. No, I don't even mean because I hate answering them. It's just like I'm so bad at, like, the one thing that would surprise.
Well, you know, to me, I'm always surprised that you're still in school when you're so successful in poker. And I know a lot of times it's because you want something to fall back on or whatever. But, I mean, to me, to find out you're still going to school is just incredible. And I just wonder if there's something else that people wouldn't really know about you that or is shocking.
Well, I guess, well, this isn't really shocking, but I guess recently revealed in the Poker Road, I guess some of the reasoning behind the law school thing, you know, it's definitely not something to fall, well, I mean, I guess it can't hurt as something to fall back on, but
right.
It's more about just my desire to practice civil rights law, and I'm really interested in police misconduct, litigation, and sort of just abuse of authority, sort of worked on prisoners' rights, like illegal detention, defended some clients down in Guantanamo, defended indigent criminal defendants, just sort of all of that kind of work. And I guess motivated in large part due to my own experiences with cops. And so I've been in some tussles with cops. I really hate cops and think that there's a lot of problems in the way policing works. And so that's sort of my big passion, is trying to fix some of those problems. And so that's something that people don't know about me. I don't know if they'd be surprised. That probably not. Like, oh, wow, you mean that girl that's always really confrontational on TV gets in trouble with cops? Like, I know, that's shocking.
It's funny, too, that you live in New Haven. I have this vision of Jim Morrison getting maced in New Haven. And thinking...
God, the cops in New Haven are the worst, I have to tell you. It's really, really unbelievable. But yeah, so maybe not so shocking, but it's something of a reveal, I guess.
All right, Vanessa, thanks so much for spending some time with me. I really appreciate it.
Yep, no problem.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Antietta PokerCast.
All right, we got a fresh and tasty hand of the week this week, Chris.
Fresh and tasty?
Yeah, a brand new one from a brand new non-swag winner, and I like those. We haven't had, we've been kind of the bottom of the barrel for a while.
Fresh and tasty.
But now building it up. The cupboard is fuller.
Fuller.
All right, this comes from Brent from Spencer, Mass.
Okay.
All right, I just, you know.
Am I supposed to react to everything you say? I'm not sure.
No.
Five years of doing this, I still don't know what to do.
What I think is interesting about Spencer, Mass. Is that the only people that say Massachusetts are people that don't live in Mass. If you live in Mass, you never see Massachusetts, do you?
You know, I lived in Connecticut, so we never said con, so I really don't know.
Well, con is different than Mass. But... All right, so Brendan from Spencer, Massachusetts. He says he's been a long-time listener, Chris.
Oh, good.
Apparently already now finally has a hand of the week worthy of a swag, so
cool.
We appreciate that.
Very cool.
He says he's been a long-time listener since he's learned to play, and we have a terrific show that's helped him tremendously.
Hmm.
I have trouble believing that.
Hmm.
We'll find out here, though. We'll see whether we've messed this poor young lad up.
I think we mess up anybody who listens to us. even Dan Druff.
Yeah. All right, so he says, I used to go to Mohegan Sun every Sunday, play the 1-2 No Limit Cash games. And yesterday, of course, this is not yesterday. He sent this in earlier, so if you were there yesterday, hey, I saw that guy. It wasn't him.
Yeah.
He made his routine travel to the 42-table poker room. Look at this, the level of detail.
Hey, does this guy want to be our ambassador? He's giving more detail than most people would, so he might be a good fit for us.
He bought in for his usual 300, which is the max, and he says he likes to buy in for the max. He allows for swings. Very smart. Didn't play very hands for the first 45 minutes as he's trying to get a feel for the table. You know, I wonder about this because I always put my hand right down on the table. I'm like, speed cloth. I got it.
Felt.
Yeah, it takes him 45 minutes. I don't get it. Since the table seemed relatively loose.
Okay.
All right. He's in the baton on the 8 seat. And the hand begins, and it's folded to the 5 seat, who limps for $2. 6 seat calls, and we have another fold. And it's down to us with the queen of spades, 9 of spades.
Wow.
2 callers in, and of course the blinds behind us, they act. What do you do? And this is the point where when I say, what do? That you actually answer me.
I fold. I fold queen 9 of spades. I'm sorry, I fold it. Is that good enough?
Sure. Everybody has their own opinion.
Would you play it in a no-limit cash game, queen 9 of spades?
Probably not. I don't like those two gappers, even in position unsuited. But, you know, he hasn't played for the first 45 minutes. Maybe he's getting frisky. He's trying to get a feel for the table. Maybe now he has a feel for the table. And you are in position. If you can get in for $2, maybe you flop big. If not, you throw it away. You know, you do it a couple times in position. I wouldn't do it out of position often. But,
Are we the button on this?
We are the button.
We are the button.
So.
That's right. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. But if I'm going to play it, I'm either going to play it for a decent raise to get the limpers out, or I'm going to limp along with it and, you know, and try to just hit it big with a small investment. But if I'm going to play it, if I was going to play it, I would probably just limp. I wouldn't raise. But if I was going to play it aggressively, then obviously I would make a big raise. Like, let's say we had 2 limpers already, 2, and probably I would probably make it like 12 or 15.
Well, what I think you need to recognize in this hand, and we had another non-qualifying hand of the week that I've been emailing back and forth with a gentleman this week about is understanding what you're looking for and whether you can get away from a hand or what you're trying to do. So, I mean, if you're going to try to represent a bigger hand on most flops because you're in position, then raise is probably what you want to do here, right?
Yeah, exactly. I would probably – well – it seems like it's a loose table, he said, right? So maybe I would raise just because it's loose and I want to make sure that these guys who are calling are going to pay the call with their loose cards. I don't know. It's hard for me to really like come up with a defense for this hand because I'm probably folding it. So it's tough. But if I'm going to play it for a raise, yeah, it's going to be like 12 to 15 then.
All right, well, what about this? If the table's relatively loose, is this the kind of hand that you want to come in for a raise with?
Would
you not rather just limp here and hope to hit big because you know you're going to get paid off? I mean, here's the thing. When I said, you know, you're going to raise and try to represent hands on the flop, it's going to be tougher to do in a loose table.
Yeah.
Because people are going to continue to call you or play back at you. If it's a tight table, then you can represent all kinds of hands.
Yeah. I have no – if like I said, if I was going to play it myself just normally, I would limp. But if I'm going to raise, I'm going to raise a lot. So maybe you're right. You know, at a pretty loose table, maybe you just limp and hope to hit big and maybe they'll pay you off or – try to force you off a hand that you have a best hand, but I think I'm folding it, to be honest with you. That's the lesson in this one. I don't think I'm playing this hand.
Okay, I probably would too, but if I'm going to play, I'm going to limp here and hope to hit big, if not get out, and it only cost me $2 out of my 300 stack.
Right.
All right, well, Hero decides to raise to 7.
All right, well, I don't think that doesn't accomplish anything, really. I can't imagine people folding for $5 more, especially to get one caller, you know, and then you're just like, yeah, that's not enough for me. If I'm going to raise, it's got to be a healthy raise, and if I'm going to play it weekly, then it's just going to be a limp. I can't, 7's just not enough. 7's probably not even enough raise, even if you had no limpers yet. You've already got 2 limpers, so 7 I don't think is enough anyway.
Yeah, I think at this point we're just hoping that we hit something at this point to get this money back, because otherwise I think we just kind of donated an extra $5 to this pot.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, well, the raise did get the blinds to fold, but neither of the initial 2 limpers are scared by our massive raise to 7. And they both call, and we're three-handed going to the flop. Pot is $24, and the flop is the King of Diamonds, Queen of Hearts, 9 of Spades. Extra swag for Brent for putting those in sequential order. All right, so we flopped the bottom 2 pair, and our 2 opponents checked to us.
Ooh. All right, well, obviously we've hit this flop nicely. The problem is, though, is hands that beat us could easily be out there. That's the problem. Like, queen 9, I mean, somebody could have Jack 10 very easily here.
King Queen is
King Queen, yeah. Although I mean, King Queen isn't the first thing I put somebody on just because, generally that's a raising hand. If you're gonna play it, you either raise it or fold it. And so, but it is loose. But the loose doesn't mean they play like idiots either. It just means that they're
right.
Loose. So if you're King Queen, generally you're raising with it, especially if you're first in the pot. So seat 6 and 7, or 5 and 6, right? That's what and 6 would have raised with King Queen, you'd like to think. You could be wrong, but Jack 10 is a hand where you might limp call with. So obviously I like 2 pair and I'm not going to be afraid of anything right now, but people start, you know, give me some resistance, and I'm going to be concerned with it and maybe be cautious, because isn't it TJ said on our cruise that the hand that people lose the most money on is bottom 2 pair?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So just be careful here. You know, I mean, when they send the hand of the weekend, you're always cautious anyway because you think they've lost the hand. So I'm always careful when they tell me they flop bottom 2 pair. But you got to like this flop to start with. So you're very interesting. What do they do?
All right, well, they checked to us. Yeah, so
already.
It's
okay.
On us. Pot's $24. What do we do here?
Well, you know, it's a very draw-heavy board, too. So especially for hands that would have limped, called. I don't know. I'd probably bet like 18, maybe 20, because half the pot probably doesn't seem to be enough here. If somebody has something like, you know, queen 10, you know, then you're giving them a chance to hit a bigger 2 pair or even a straight. So I don't know. Maybe I'd bet a little more than half, like 3/4, like $18.
I'm going to say I don't think there is a winning play here. I mean, I think you're messed up no matter what you do here. And this is what I'm going to say. I mean, we've got a bottom two pair, so obviously we've got a hand now, right?
Yeah.
You're very right that a jack 10 is very possible. I do think king queen, even though they didn't raise, is possible. Down king 9 is. I'm not really worried about sets at this point, unless we got really sneaky. But if we don't bet here, then we're letting draws get there for free.
Right.
If we do bet here, what happens when someone raises us pretty big?
Yeah.
Do we 3-bet them? Or do we just call, not knowing where we are, but still in position? We got two more streets that people are going to be firing at us. I really think this is a no-win flop for us, even though our hand improved.
Yeah, I don't know if I could check, though. I mean, you played queen.
No,
right?
I think the best thing you got to do here is bet, but I just don't know what you're going to do.
If they raise?
If they raise. So, and if they call, really, I mean, obviously you got another shot to figure out what they're going to do on the turn, and you can improve to a boat or something like that. But I think you got to think about what the likely effects are of what you're doing before you do them so you know what's going to happen. So I think you got to consider what you're going to do if somebody raises here.
Yeah, well, if...
Though I guess if we decide you got to bet anyhow, I guess you figure that out later, but...
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I made it 18 and some guy made it 60, I'd have to get away from it. I really would. I mean, what is that check raise telling me? It tells me he has such a monster hand that he could check to me, and if I had raised preflop, I'm telling him I probably have something like aces or ace king or ace queen, you know, or something like that. So he's thinking I have a really big hand, and he's hoping for me to bet so he could check raise me because his hand is so good that he can wait until the turn to have to bet. So if I did bet and somebody raised me here, I would have to consider getting away from it. I would consider getting away from that hand.
Well, I guess the other point, too, is the only hand that's going to raise us probably is king-queen.
Yeah.
Jack-10's not going to raise when there's not a flush draw out there, right?
Yeah, not yet. No, not yet. You're right. Probably not, no.
So maybe there's no risk right now, but...
All right, it could be a set of nines, but it's highly unlikely since it'd be the case nine coming out, and they... probably wouldn't have played it the way they did pre-flop.
Same with the case queen. So, I mean, right. Really, you're looking at, theoretically, pocket kings, which no way. They're going to limp in.
So, really, the only hands here are jack-10 and king-queen for anybody to stick around, or somebody with something like king-jack if they don't check raises. So that's what we're hoping, is that no one check raises us. And if they do, then we have to think we're beat. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, at this point, we have to bet, I guess. I mean, I guess I talked myself out of worrying about getting raised because I don't think Jack 10's going to raise here.
Okay. Yeah, that's even scarier.
Yeah.
All right, so I would think $18 is like, what, two-thirds of the pot or so, whatever. I don't know, 18. What's 24 in the pot?
Yeah, 24 in the pot.
Yeah, I would bet somewhere around 18 or so, I guess.
I think that's an excellent bet.
Yeah, it's three-quarters of the pot.
Our hero bet 12. Yeah. You know, it's probably a standard one, but
yeah, you're,
as you said. Our first player calls. The next player raises the 50.
Ooh. Wow, with a call in between, this person's raising.
Now, he did say that this guy, the raiser, has been a bit of a maniac, if that helps.
So I have to call 38 to win like 140-ish. Hmm. Wow, dude. Why do we do this? Why do we just embarrass ourselves every week? Oh, man. The pot odds are so huge.
But the pot equity.
The pot equity, that's the thing. Well, there is no pot equity because really nobody's all in. So, oh, man. Wow. Two pair. If he has king-queen, we're screwed. If he has king-queen, we are absolutely begging for a nine. And that's just two outs. Oh, my God. Can I fold here? Another guy calls, too. That's the thing. The call could be jack-10.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Jack-10. It could also be a draw, which obviously we're ahead of now, but then our hand's up against a hand that he's telling us is better than our hand now, and then a hand that probably has a better draw than we do, obviously.
God. You know, doing it like this with hindsight, I'm folding. But doing it at the table, I'm not so sure I fold.
No, I don't think a lot of people fold, and I think probably a lot of people should fold here, probably.
Yeah, I think that this is a good lay down. If you lay it down here, and if this guy has king queen, I mean, we're hoping for two outs, and we don't even know if somebody else has a nine in their hand. That's why they called, or it could be jack 10, and we could be having to hit a boat to win this hand. And if we do, we got all the sick thing would be another boat if we had queen nine and a queen came.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I think I gotta lay it down here now because a call and a raise. What the hell does this guy have? He's got to have jack 10. And that guy could have jack 10 now because of the call in between.
Yeah, because there's so much in there, and he figures he's got somebody betting and another caller that he's going to get. He's going to be able to build a pot with it now.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Doing hand of the week, I'm laying it down. Live, I really don't know what I would do. I mean, I would have to get a real good sense of what these players are like. I mean, I guess he said the guy was really a maniac, but...
Yeah, and generally it's a relatively loose table, yeah. Too. So, I mean, you can't necessarily put them on better hands. They just, you know, they could be playing the situation here, thinking that you're just c-betting. You didn't raise a lot pre-flop.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at worst, he bet 12, so he's out $19 and still has a ton of cash behind, so...
And I guess it's technically a squeeze here as well, too, right?
Yeah.
You're the raiser if he gets you out because you're worried about what the 5 seat, which obviously we're both saying the 5 seat screams jack 10 here, so we're going to fold. And then the 5 seat, if it doesn't have jack 10, boom, he lays it down. So, I mean, it could be a move, too.
Yeah. Jeez.
Pretty good move, to be honest.
I'm going to have to fold. I'm just going to fold and just move on. I mean, again, at the table, I would have to look for some serious signs that I'm behind, but... In the way these hands of the week always go, and the way the betting has gone, this guy not only check raised us, but he check raised us knowing there's a caller in between who could easily have jack 10. So this guy's got to have a bigger hand than us somehow. It screams king queen to me, or jack 10. So I have to let it go.
I'm with you on this. Our hero, of course, makes it a rich hand of the week by calling.
Yeah.
And the 5 seat gets out of the way. So we don't have to worry about him having jack 10.
So now we're either up against king, queen, and jack 10. We have to hit... Or a guy squeezing with nothing.
So again, we don't really know.
He could have king, jack.
Yep.
But I don't know.
All right, well, the pot now is 136. We are heads up, and the turn is the queen of diamonds. So our board now is the king of diamonds, queen of hearts, nine of spades, queen of diamonds. And our villain bets $24 into us and has 100 behind.
Wow, 24 into 130.
Six spot.
Wow. All right, let's just call then. Oh, man. No, obviously, if you're at the table with a full house, you're not, you know, you're hoping this guy's got like ace king or something weird, and jack 10 you're really hoping for. I guess I'd raise. Probably make it 75 because three times 70, yeah, 75, 80.
That's exactly what our hero did.
Yeah, of course.
Raised to 75 and then leaves him 175 behind. And our opponent pauses for a minute, then goes all in for $100. Yeah. So, I mean, pushes the rest in, which yeah. I guess is under 24. So,
can't fold now anyway.
$50 for us to call at this point with a boat.
Yeah, obviously, we're getting. We got a boat, and it's only $50 to win almost seven times that. So,
yep.
Yeah. I call, and hopefully he has jack 10.
All right, well, our hero thought of what the villain could have, realized that the queen was probably a bad card for him, for us, I mean. But makes the $50 call, of course. River comes the deuce of clubs. And our villain pauses, showing his cards. We flip over a full house. And he turns over.
Good. Just tell me.
King of clubs. Queen of clubs.
Queen of clubs. Oh, brutal. Brutal. That is bad. Bad. And it's interesting that he doesn't raise with king, queen preflop. And that doesn't make him a loose player. You know what I mean? That doesn't make him loose. That makes him, I don't know, not a bad player. But that's just odd to me that he didn't raise with king queen.
Yeah, we don't know the table dynamics. You know, maybe maybe it's a limp heavy table, and they just hopes to hit big or outplay people on the flop. So you know, why put more money if you need to?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Wow, look what a cooler hand.
Yeah, and I think you played it well the rest of the way. I mean, might as well check to the initial raiser, let him put a bet in, then check raise.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
We're not in that spot. You're not really worried about the Jack 10 as much as we are.
No, and the other thing too is now you're, as our hero, you know, you're praying that he has the Jack 10, and you just boated up on him, but not to be king queen. We knew it was one of two hands had to be king queen or Jack 10, and we were screwed anyway going into the turn. Either way, we were behind. That's why it's tough to. But again, you're at the table live. You're playing cash games. You flop two pair against a couple of limpers. With a, you know, it'd be different if you flop two pair and there was like a four and a five on board, because then you could have a set or something. You'd think somebody would limp with those kind of cards, but you're not really putting them on a set of kings or queens. So you have to think that you're pretty much ahead here, and you don't really put limpers on king queen. So Jack 10 is really the only hand that you would think that you're losing to at that point. What a shame. That's tough. Tough hand.
Well, Brent, even though you didn't win the pot, you will get something worth $335, a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware. Sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store, including Annie Up shirts in the Annie Up store.
Cool.
At antiupstore.com. And everyone else, please send your hands of the week, your comments, your criticisms, your recipes to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
And send us your treatment for War Games 2.
Yes. Actually, I think it was a War Games 2, wasn't there?
Was there a War Games 2? I didn't even know.
I'm pretty sure there was a sequel,
sad. Yes. Broderick wasn't in that, right?
No, I don't think anybody was in it.
Oh, my God. That's so sad. That is the saddest thing I think I've ever heard.
Oh, are you sadder than Police Academy 6?
Hey, you know what? They've already made the mistake, and they just kept going with it. At least they're consistent. War Games 2 without Broderick or Sheedy or even the Joshua guy, I mean, that's pretty sad.
I was wrong. It was called War Games: The Dead Code in 2008.
Oh my God! They waited like 20 years to come out with it.
AKA War Games 2.
Oh jeez, unbelievable.
Let me check real quick before we let our listeners go, so they don't have to waste their time on IMDb. It stars Matt Lanter and Amanda Walsh.
I have no idea who those people are.
No, in fact, actually, I'm looking through the. No, don't know who any of these people are. Straight to video.
Oh, man.
Well,
right,
apparently,
well.
Instead of Whopper, they have Ripley. R-I-P-L-E-Y.
Oh, jeez. And do you have to believe it or not? I'd like to thank Vanessa Selt for joining us on the show this week. Great interview. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.